Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Overreaction Monday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. A lot of stuff to do today. Not even all necessarily related to the National Football League, if you can believe that. Like, normally Mondays we come out, it's all Lions, Michigan, Michigan State, all that good stuff. But you know there's going to have to be some Tigers talk in here today because they now absolutely possess at least the sixth spot in the playoffs and could yet overtake the Kansas City Royals as well. We will get to that because they're starting to look like basically a lock for this thing. And we'll go in and we'll explain all the stupid the tiebreakers and things because obviously, you know, tying with Minnesota isn't good enough. I don't believe tying with KC is necessarily good enough either because there's a lot of things that come into play with that. We'll get into all that here in fairly short order. I mean, obviously, though, I mean, we have to start with the Lions, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you saw that game on Sunday.
I watched the entire game.
And everything that could have gone right for the Lions seems to. Like, it's really weird because especially now that we've, like, cut down and all the preseason stuff and are adding weeks to the season and what have you. Like the regular season, the first 3 weeks feels like preseason now.
Yeah.
Like everyone's still figuring out what they're doing on the field to an extent. Everyone's still kind of, you know, team's still kind of starting to gel. It's kind of an odd thing how, who knew? Apparently taking away preseason wasn't necessarily, may have not necessarily been the best thing. Because now, like, everyone just seems to look sloppy, like, even still, like, 3 weeks into the season. But you had some really cool things that happened in this game. I've got audio. Like, Eddie was nice enough to send me all the audio on some of these things, and you'll probably hear throughout. Like, for example, that Jameer Gibbs touchdown. Oh, take a listen.
Jared working out of the gun. Takes the snap, he's back, four-man rush. Goff sets, throws, got Amon-Ra, flips it on the hook and ladder, coming inside the five, wow, to the end zone.
Yes.
Jameer Gibbs,
yes,
touchdown Detroit Lions. Oh, baby, how beautiful is that? Goff to Amon-Ra, flips it back to 26, who takes it to the house.
Nice. I didn't even know what it had a name. I didn't know. It's called hook and ladder.
Yep.
I did not know that.
Was not expecting to see them bust that out, but that was fun. I know, there's still going to be people that are going to complain about anything Jared Goff does no matter what. But he did, the first half of this game, he looked as good as you possibly could have hoped for. And, yeah, you kind of in the second half kind of lead back a little bit. But certainly that interception, you wish you could have that back.
Yeah.
But ultimately you pulled out the win. He got the big... He got the big throws when he needed to, that one to Amon-Ra on that 3rd and 12, and then having a wide open lane to get to run for the first down, nice little 8-yard pickup there,
yep, yep,
that ended up sealing the game for Detroit. And honestly, as kind of, as kind of off at times as Goff has looked so far in the early going this year, that was really nice to see.
Yeah, it was a well done game. I mean, and the Cardinals, they weren't the slouches we were expecting them to be. They put up a good fight.
Arizona has definitely improved their stock quite a bit from last season.
Oh yeah.
But thankfully, as it turns out, when you have an Aiden Hutchinson, those aren't things that really matter so much.
So here come the Cardinals now with 5:05 to play. First down at the Lion 32.
Gonna
get hit, yes. Gonna go down, sacked back at the 40-yard line. That time, that defensive line converged upon him. Mekhi Wingo and Aiden Hutchinson said, "I'll meet you at the quarterback."
Hutch has just been on fire this season thus far, has he not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely a Pro Bowler. Definitely All-American.
Your D-line is about as good as you could have possibly hoped for. And Kyler was starting to look pretty good these last couple weeks. And he did get 34 yards on the opening drive. That would be about it. From there, they managed to keep him in the pocket. They put plenty of pressure on him. The rest of the way, he only had 11 rushing yards. For a guy who's usually very much a running threat, they were able to take that out pretty solidly.
Nice.
He wasn't even really able to get to scramble and make passes outside of the pocket, really. And it even more so in the second half. You saw them really kind of force him to make some really bad, inaccurate throws. He went just 12 of 23 in the second half for 132 yards a pick, pass rating of 51.4 if you're into that sort of thing. And then the running game for Arizona was held to just less than 2.5 yards a carry. That's really bad. 13 rushes for 32 yards on the day for the Cards. Like, that line looked absolutely elite yesterday. And we were kind of worried a little bit that, I mean, we know how good this team is at stopping the run. And we also know that at times, mobile QBs have tended to burn them a little bit. And I think there was a little bit of hesitation coming into this matchup, knowing what Kyler Murray does, that this could be the case here. But thankfully, your line was absolutely up to the challenge, and Hutch was certainly up to the challenge. I don't believe he got his was that the only sack he had on the day? I believe so.
Yeah. So Troy had two on the day.
So we were wrong about our you had predicted two sacks in the picks on Friday. Yeah. I saw that and raised you one. Better luck next week, I suppose.
Well, he did enough sacking the game before. 4.5 on the night.
More than enough for anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And even so, your linebacker core, too, because obviously Derek Barnes left early in the game. Alex Anzalone didn't play. So it was a lot of relying on backups, and they did pretty solid. Like, Kyler did have a decent amount of success throwing right over the middle of the field at times. But for the most part, these guys lived up to what you needed them to.
Yep.
And your defensive backs were a surprising, were really a pleasant surprise for a change. I mean, yeah, you had Carlton Davis and Terrion Arnold on pass interference calls. It's always something with Terrion Arnold, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He's a rookie. I get it. Rookie cornerbacks have it tougher than damn near any other position in the NFL. Like, it takes them a minute to make adjustments to, you know, to playing at the NFL level. But, man, there's just some things that you'd like to see improve there. But
it was nice to see us actually get away with something, that two-minute warning at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
Usually those kind of things are going against us. It was nice to see us on the cheating side for once.
Not even the cheating side, the getting away with cheating side.
To get away with it, yeah. Get a little referee love.
But you really got to give some credit here to this secondary unit, because you really kind of needed, since the offense wasn't really just locking this game up by any means, you needed the secondary to make sure that Murray couldn't just uncork a deep downfield pass or two and burn the Lions on it. But he threw a total of 7 passes that were more than 20 yards or more downfield. He completed 1 to his own team, and he completed 1 to Kirby Joseph.
He wants to throw here on second down, going deep. Wants Harrison Jr.
Yes. Kirby picked off, intercepted by the Lions. Picked off in the end zone. Kirby Joseph with the grab. That time they tried to go up tempo. Murray tried to go quickly, tried to go for all of it to the end zone, but underthrew Harrison by a good distance, and it's picked off by Kirby Joseph.
It's crazy because, like, right now, Joseph and Brian Branch, like, there aren't many safeties in this league. There certainly, I don't think, is a safety duo in this league that is consistently as good as these two guys are. You had that. You had another good breakup on a third down. Branch had a couple pass breakups. Even Terrion Arnold got a pass breakup on the day. Your defense was about everything that you could have hoped for. The real star of this thing, though, there's no way around this. I told you on Friday what your game plan was. Run David Montgomery out the middle. Dare him. Dare Arizona's defense to stop him, to make him turn him back. And this is what happened.
Goff up under center. Turns. Gives to Montgomery. Hesitates. Cuts to his left. Did he get in? Yes, sir. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. They march right down the field to open this game. David Montgomery from a yard out, and it's the Lions 6 and Arizona nothing.
105 yards in the night.
His first 100-yard game of the season.
Really?
Yep, his fourth 100-yard game as a Detroit Lion. And he was fighting for every single one of those yards. Like, we talk about how Montgomery and Gibbs are that thunder and lightning duo. Montgomery's just the guy that can He'll plow through a D line and like take half of the line with him and somehow get an extra 3 or 4 yards out of it. He has that ability and that ability to stay up, and it really says in the yard how much in the yards after contact per carry, 3.8. That's after making that first contact. Like, he still will push that whole line an extra 3 yards and change down the field. He's just one of the best at that in this league. Meanwhile, Jahmyr Gibbs almost had 100 yards in his own right. He had a nice little first down pickup on a 3rd and 12. And then, of course, the hook and ladder we talked about just a little bit ago.
I love that. That was highlight reel right there.
It is fun, I have to say, like, watching them bust out these
plays.
Yeah. Like that, and like the fake punt and stuff. Like
that's a Dan Campbell, you call him Dan Gamble. I mean, that's his trademark. I mean, I love Dan Campbell. He's never going to be able to pay for a cup of coffee in this town ever again.
No, him and Ben Johnson both. And the fact that he's willing to deploy these plays so early on really makes you wonder just what is he holding back? I mean, if that's just the stuff he's willing to bust out in week one, week two, week three,
what else
are we going to see
in
week 17?
It is really cool because, I mean, we've never experienced this, at least I've never experienced this watching Lions, where, you know, it's fourth and one and they're going for it. Usually nail and bite and you know, it's all of a sudden – they could actually pull this one out.
Yeah, that is – it's not something we're used to out of this team by any means. It's kind of nice to actually see that – you know, see the narrative on this team just change in real time.
Yeah.
And there's still some things that are there – now, there are a couple concerns, and they're mostly injury-related. So it sounds like Sam Laporta might have a little bit
ankle.
Of a thing. And, you know, I'm fine, ultimately, I think – if they just kind of rest him a little bit till after the bye, like your bye is in what, week 5 anyway?
Yeah,
like,
Monday against Seattle and then a bye week.
I'm honestly fine if like Laporta's just like playing the minimum that week, give him some time to rest up, because you know what? I'm not worried about having Sam Laporta in week 4. I'm worried about not having Sam Laporta in week 18. I would much rather have him healthy when we need him in December, January, maybe February, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I would much rather have him.
Jinx it.
I would much rather have him available and healthy then than right now. Like, rest him up. Like, do what you got to do to protect this man, because you're going to need him very much down the stretch. The other kind of worrying thing, Marcus Davenport. They're saying that elbow injury he's got might potentially be a season ender, per Ian Rappaport.
See, that's not what we need.
Not at all. Like, and with how good your defensive front has been so far, that would be a huge loss. I mean, on the score sheet, he's only got 2 tackles and half a sack, but he's a good chunk of the reason that Hutch has the opportunity to get to QBs and get all the sacks that he is. He's been very good at, you know, shrinking collapse in that pocket. Like, he's very integral to that whole process. And not having him is, admittedly, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
You got to really hope that it doesn't end up being a season-ending thing. Like, we'll hopefully have some news coming up here in the next couple days on that front. But that's something that kind of concerns me. Also, for what it's worth, you lost Derek Barnes and Aleem McNeil in that game. It looks like both are going to be out for some time, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be season-ending by any means. Like, they're probably going to be out at least a couple games. Dan Campbell said, quote, "I can't say they're not going to be long-term, but I don't feel like it's something that we're worried about season-ending."
Right.
So we'll have some updates on that, I assume, rather soon. It sucks about Davenport, too, because he's shown flashes of being that guy. Like, he is a starting-level talent. And like I said, he's a guy who's been absolutely essential in allowing Hutch to thrive and do what he does. But this is now the second straight season where he'll have missed the majority of the year with injury, if this ends up being true. In fact, he's only apparently played more than 13 games in a season once in his entire career. So, I mean, you know how this team goes. It's, you know, very much a next man up league, and it's very, very much with this team, a next man up kind of thing. But that's gonna be
that's going to be a pretty major loss if he ends up not being able to go. Crazy to think that, like, and he's not getting any younger. This is his seventh season in the league at 28, and he's played a combined, he might end up finishing out with a combined six games played in the last 2 years. That's something that would be a huge loss for Detroit if it ends up being a thing.
Yep.
But it kind of looks like it might be. But other than that, it sounds like there's, I mean, yeah, it's concerning, but also, you know, you're showing a pretty decent ability among, you know, developing young talent who come up and fill those holes. I mean, look at those. Look at your couple rookie guys who have come up and made such impacts on the defense over the last few years. Like, I have a surprising amount of faith that ultimately Campbell will find somebody to plug in there who will be at least able to get you by. I mean, you had all last season where you didn't really have anyone opposite Hutch, but I have a feeling that by the time if we start to see the effects of that on field in the next few weeks or so, I'd like to hope Brad Holmes is going to be on the phone with a pass rusher in a trade at some point before that all settles. Other thing I kind of do want to touch on, the coaching. And for the most part, I was very happy with the coaching. I know there's a few people that would probably question some things, particularly the fourth and one where they failed to convert. I'm sure like there's a couple of those calls Ben Johnson would rather have back. But for the most part, I don't have any issues ultimately with the decisions that were made. The going forward on fourth and one instead of going for what would have been a 52-yard kick, I'm fine with that, and I'll tell you why. Like, keeping the ball, running out the clock. Like, these were very much the priority at this point. Like, if the offense wasn't really moving the ball all that well, but I would much rather just chew down that clock than worry about the kick, especially after, like, not to dog on Jake Bates. Like, I'm sure he's already feeling trash about this, but when you have him missing an extra point early on, like, that's something that used to be automatic in this league. And when you start missing those, like, we get back to Dan Campbell hates his kickers again, and now you're not going to get the opportunity to go for that 52-yard field goal. Like, that's just how that's going to be, unfortunately, if you can't deliver in that scenario. Like, he'd start to trust Bates a little bit, too, and then, well, we kind of saw him pull back from that a little bit last week and then certainly this week. And you could make the argument that they should have gone for it on fourth and one from their own 47. I mean, I get why they didn't, though, because you don't – that late in the game, I totally get not wanting to give the Cards better field position than you ultimately did. Like, I can kind of see why you – because at that point, you managed to move the ball about 25 yards downfield in, like, the last couple. Like, Gibbs ran one up the middle, didn't really go anywhere. Montgomery got a few yards a couple different times, but, like, other than that first, like, most of that 25 yards in that drive was knocked out on the first play from Montgomery. So I don't blame you for not, because you really want to spot Arizona ultimately at your 47-yard line. They already ended up getting a field goal on that drive when starting at their own 7. So, I mean, if you spot them, like, almost 50 yards closer than that, the odds of them getting that touchdown ultimately, I think, goes up a lot more in tying up that game. So I kind of get not going for it in that situation. So, you know, I'm not gonna come down on Campbell for that at all. The thing I will say, challenging the spot on that third down run from Montgomery that I thought converted. But Campbell said after the game it was his understanding that he was, in fact, short of the first down. I would have liked to see the challenge thrown out on that, but really a minor quibble at best. And mad props, honestly, most of all to Aaron Glenn, because we talked about how much they were going to need to contain Kyler Murray keep him from scrambling outside of the pocket, keep him from scrambling for runs, not giving him a whole lot of time, forcing him to make bad throws where his foot, you know, where he's on his back foot and not putting himself in good position. And ultimately, that worked out really well for the Lions. So really, you got to give props to Aaron Glenn for setting up a defensive scheme that really allowed the Lions to put that pressure on Kyler Murray and ultimately was a big part of securing the win. Like, Murray only had one big run in that game, and that's a good chunk of the reason why right there. And honestly, if there wouldn't have been a hold there right with your left tackle, you know, that probably would have also not happened. But that's you can't win them all, I guess. We ended up getting away with one of our own with a call that went our way later on in the game, so I'm not going to be mad about that. And ultimately, we came away with a W, so I'm really not going to freak out that much about it.
Yep.
A good game all the way around. Now, let's see if they can keep this up next week against Geno Smith and the Seahawks. Another guy, another mobile QB who has historically burned this team the last several times that they've met up. But if that, what we saw against the Cards on Sunday, is any indication, I don't think we're going to have a repeat of games past against Geno and company. We do have to hit a break here. I think we'll get into some Tigers stuff in the next little bit. Maybe we'll touch on State and Michigan briefly. We'll figure it out when we get there. It is Happy Hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour. You'll have to excuse us. Adam's a little distracted today because there's a couple things that he's all excited for the Red Wings because they're getting set to start their preseason officially Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't know why they're making the Wings, why they have to wait, because a lot of games started yesterday. Utah played their first game, and apparently their first goal was on their own empty net.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Dun, 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 dun. So, I mean, they are still the ghost of Christmas Arizona Coyotes, but,
Yeah, but I expected as much.
Yeah, so. Yeah, the Wings play on Wednesday against the Chicago Blackhawks. And then looking forward to it. I mean, some big questions. I just was watching a video on NHL Network talking about what team are they going to knock out of the Atlantic Division to get in there. And that's a mighty fine question because I don't know who. I mean, you've got last year it was Tampa finished, Florida finished at top, and then you've got Toronto in the third and Boston in the second spot. So, I mean.
Well, you could make an argument for Tampa based off of
Stamkos leaving.
Well, Stamkos leaving, and already, I mean, that's a team that last year got blown out in the first round by Florida. They didn't exactly squeak into the playoffs per se. Like, there was still a comfortable bit of distance between them and the next team up in the Red Wings. But even that being the case, you still kind of expect that. You didn't see a whole lot that suggests that they're not going to take a pretty big step back, or at least a moderate step back going into this season. Who did they end up? Did they add anybody major? Like, you've been keeping up probably more on them than
yes.
I am.
Yes, Guentzel, I believe.
Oh, that's right. They added Jake Guentzel. I forgot about that.
And he probably could fill Stamkos' skates.
I would say so. Probably be a lot healthier, too.
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, there's that. It was weird seeing the first footage of Stammer as a Nashville Predator. It was just weird. Those mustard yellow sweaters, they've got to go. But anyway.
Yeah, not my favorite either.
I digress. I'm just wondering.
Not my team, though.
I'm wondering about the goaltending situation for the Detroit Red Wings because, I mean, they were talking about on NHL Network. I don't know if they weren't doing their homework, but they're like, it's Ville Husso and Nedeljkovic. I'm like, you might need to read up a little bit, dude. But here, I mean, they've got four top goaltenders. No, I'm not even going to say top goaltenders. Cam Talbot, Alex Lyon, Ville Husso, and Jack Campbell. I mean, these are all guys who have been starters in their own teams, not good starters.
Yeah, no, none of them have been particularly
good. So there's going to be some decisions that need to be made. And what happens to the two that find themselves out? I mean, you've got Cam Talbot, who's got 11 years of experience. You got Alex Lyon with 7. Ville Husso with 4 years. I thought he had more than years experience, honestly, 4 years. And then you got Jack Campbell.
Well, he was backing up Binnington for a lot of that time in St. Louis.
Like,
he wasn't really, like,
the number one guy.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think he was ever really a starter until he came here.
Right. So it is very interesting what they're going to do with, I mean, this is going to be a Lalonde-Iserman production, finding out what's going to happen in goaltending. I mean, I know they got Jack Campbell and Cam Talbot for a song, but, you know, you're still paying Lyon. You're still paying Husso.
And I don't know how that's ultimately going to sort itself out. Like, what I assume is going to happen is that one of them is just going to be terrible and play themselves out of the rotation. Like, I can't exactly imagine a scenario in which one of those guys really just steps it up and becomes, like, that lockdown guy.
Yeah.
Because none of them really seem to have that
capability.
I don't know.
Alex Lyon was doing quite well for us. We wanted too much from him. He didn't have the endurance. So when Husso was injured, you relied a lot on Alex Lyon, and he answered the bell, but you know it was too much for him. There you were wanting like five or six games in a row from him. You just can't do that. Those days of that goaltender playing 62 games are over.
So you were asking, by the way,
yeah.
Who could the Wings pass to get into the playoffs?
Probably Tampa or Florida. Tampa or Toronto.
Here's the thing. I don't think they're passing a team in the Atlantic. I think they're passing a team in the Metro.
Metro, they...
Because remember, like for those who don't know how the hell the stupid playoff format now works in the NHL, it's the top three teams in each division. The bottom two seeds are wild cards.
In the Metropolitan Division, they're kind of showing their age. I mean, you got Washington not doing as well. You got Pittsburgh. I mean, they just signed Sidney Crosby to another deal, $8.7 million. I wonder how they came up with that number.
How?
But, I mean, they're still a shell of their former self. I mean, New York Rangers, you never know what kind of Rangers you're going to get from game to game. So, yeah, I mean, they could make the playoffs, but they're probably going to be sneaking in through the wild card. As opposed to leapfrogging a Tampa, a Toronto.
But that's the wonderful thing. You don't need to. Yeah. I don't need this team to make the to make it as a division qualifier. Like it's all playoffs, man. Like wild card berth counts every bit as much as a divisional. Like
yes, it does.
I mean, obviously, you know, more favorable matchups being what they are, but I'm not going to be mad if they get in as the 8th seed. But that's my point. Like, the Metro is a lot weaker division. Like,
it is.
I mean, beyond the Rangers and Carolina, who can you really see as a lock for the playoffs? You can make an argument that the Isles could get in. You could make an argument for Washington. You could maybe even make an argument for New Jersey. But I think you can make every bit as strong of an argument for Detroit.
Detroit is...
Than any of those three
teams. I think if Detroit was in the Metropolitan Division, they probably would have been a top three.
They would have probably been in the playoffs already.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, they got stuck with the Atlantic Division, which, you know, what was it, like 8 years ago, or even maybe 6 years ago, this was a kind of a laughable kind of division, but not anymore.
Oh, no. Like, Florida has really kind of become a powerhouse.
Florida, Tampa, and...
And Tampa always was.
Yeah.
Boston. Boston's been good for a while, and then Toronto is usually good for at least the first round of the playoffs. Yeah. But there's my bold prediction for you.
Yep.
The Atlantic will send five teams into the playoffs this year.
All right.
Lock it. Book it.
Okay.
Book it now. Like, it's going to happen.
All right.
Detroit's going to be that last... Going to be one of the last two teams in... Is it going to be them, and I would guess Tampa are probably your two wild card teams.
Okay, all right.
Because Florida's gonna probably be the best in the. They're gonna be the best in the East, I would think. Then probably Boston. Okay, Florida's gonna be Florida. Then New York. Then Carolina. Then Boston.
And Rangers then, or Isles? Rangers, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Rangers. Okay, yes. Okay, yeah. I should have been more specific there. Yeah, New York and Carolina are probably your slam dunk. They're probably your 2 and 3 seed in the East.
Yep.
Then probably Boston. Then Toronto. Then either Detroit or Tampa. And then vice versa. If I got to lock that in right now, I would call that playoff field all day.
Detroit-Florida matchup in the playoffs is not bode well, but...
It's not ideal.
No.
So you'd really want to pass Tampa and draw... Presumably,
the Rangers.
I like your chances a little bit better against New York. I can't lie to you. I would rather that matchup. And, well, if you pull ahead of Tampa in the wild card, like, you know, maybe that's a possibility.
Yep. I like it.
But I think that's how that shakes out ultimately. Like, you're looking at it, you know, who in this division can we pull ahead of? I don't know that we can, but I don't know that we need to.
Right. We'll just kind of jump onto the Metropolitan bandwagon, see if they'll take us in. No, I mean, the Atlantic Division, I'd put them up against any other division, Central, the
Pacific,
or Metropolitan. I think the Atlantic Division is probably the strongest division in NHL.
They're the deepest, I would say. I mean, the Central, beyond Dallas and Colorado, who's really a lock from there? I mean, obviously the Stars are going to be in the mix.
Like Stars.
The Stars, the Avs, always. I mean, Nashville you could make an argument for now that Stamkos is there.
Yeah.
And then I honestly don't expect that Winnipeg's going to be – like, they're if they make it in, they're going to be like first-round fodder. Like, if I again, we're just going to put all these out there. I think Dallas, Colorado, Nashville are your three divisional teams in from the West. In the Pacific, it's got to be Vegas, the Kings, and I would say Edmonton and Vancouver definitely makes it in as well. From there, probably Winnipeg. Like, Winnipeg's probably, I think, the last team in the West and probably the first to get blown out.
Yeah, I could see it.
Again, way too early predictions all the way around, but that's kind of how I see it shaking out. But you could certainly make an argument that there's no other division in the NHL right now that has five teams that could really be contenders.
Yep.
And, you know, make decently deep playoff runs than the Atlantic does.
I agree.
We'll see how that pans out once we actually get into the season, but, like, never count out a team that just squeaks their way in. I mean, look at Detroit right now. Like, they're all of a sudden looking like world beaters out there. Yeah. And, like, they've taken the O's. They've taken, like, four out of six games from Baltimore, a team that, like, a lot of people had favored to win the AL East.
We've seen this happen, especially in the NHL, where a team just starts rolling towards the end of the season, rolling at the right time. They've been playing playoff hockey, and the Tigers have been playing playoff baseball.
Last month.
Yeah.
Easily for the last month.
Yep. Every game counts. That was what was so exciting. I think that's one of the reasons why you had Kane come back and you have Tarasenko and you got the two rookies re-signing, because that April was some exciting hockey.
It absolutely was. Like, they know we're close. They know this team is right just knocking on the door of a playoff appearance, and that with a little bit of luck could really finally break that drought. And when it happens, like, there's no place you'd rather be playing in the playoffs than Detroit. Come on. If we're to be entirely honest here, the playoff atmosphere in Detroit when the Wings make it in is unlike pretty much anything else in the NHL. I mean, non-Canadian team, certainly.
Detroit knows how to make playoffs more fun. They do it with the Pistons, they do it with the Tigers, the Wings, and you're watching it right now with the Lions. They just know how to throw a party.
And well, with the Lions, they've been waiting so long for them to be good, man. Like, we've been waiting so long to be able to celebrate so that when we finally can, we go a little bit back on a loco. That's just kind of what we do. Like, there's just no real way around that. Let's hit a break. It is happy hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. It's an Overreaction Monday. Lions, absolutely fantastic yesterday. I'm all excited. We're getting close to Red Wing season. Adam's excited. Adam just cracked open another one of those nasty Modelo tomato juice things. Let's go to Overreaction.
Well, I would have done this in the summer anyway, but yes, I get it.
Very true. But there are plenty of things to overreact to that have nothing to do with the Detroit Lions around the National Football League. Let's get to some of those, shall we? Maestro, the music, please.
All right. Sean, is this an overreaction or reality? Malik Nabers is the best wide receiver in the 2024 draft class.
I got to kind of say here, he has been very good so far, but I'm not going to say he's the best wideout yet. Not certainly as long as Marvin Harrison Jr. exists. Marvin Harrison's got 10 catches for almost 200 yards, 3 TDs thus far. Nabers, meanwhile, so far has 271 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. he's good. No doubt about it. He's a contender. But I'm not ready to officially say that just yet. I will say the thing that makes a case in his defense is that Daniel Jones is terrible. And the fact that he's still managing to do what he's doing in a just absolute garbage dumpster fire of an offense definitely gives him the nod in my book right now. At least, you know, we know what Kyler Murray is ultimately capable of. And it's going to, the rookie of the year race is going to come down to these two guys. No doubt in my mind. I'm not ready to say it's neighbors yet, though. I am leaning that way because look at who's slinging them the ball. But at this stage of the season, I'm saying it's an overreaction.
All right. Sam Darnold is the best QB in the NFL after 3 weeks. Is this a reality or overreaction?
8 touchdowns to 2 picks kind of tells you the story, doesn't it? That passing 8 passing touchdowns actually leads the NFL right now. Second in passer rating. 4th in yards per attempt. I don't know how that's happening. I don't understand how it is, but I mean it is. And even with, you know, some of the weapons that he's got over there, you really can't take away from him that if it's another QB under center, they're probably not 3-0 right now. No. I don't think they would have been 3-0 with J.J. McCarthy.
No, I don't believe so either.
I have to say, I guess this one's reality. Like, the stats haven't lied to us here yet. Will he be the best QB in the league by, you know, halfway through the season? Probably not. But right now, who's doing it better?
All right, I think I know where we're going to go on this next one. Is this reality or an overreaction? Saquon Barkley is the best signing of the NFL offseason.
I mean, the Eagles went and stole the leading rusher so far this season from their hated rival, the, at this point, irrelevant New York football Giants. And it's paid off so much for them. If, honestly, I hate to think, I mean, I don't really hate to think because I don't really like the Eagles, but I shudder to think where that team would be right now without Saquon. Like, the fact that he's come up so big for them. He had 2 touchdowns yesterday for Philly. 17 carries, 147 yards. He's tied for the NFL lead in rushing touchdowns. Like, he's the sole reason that team is even 2-1 right now. Without him, they wouldn't have won a game.
That's a little dangerous, putting all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, but, you know, you got to do it. Whatever you got to do to get ahead here, like Saquon is, he's been that guy. And if you can extend your playoff window a bit with him, you know, are you really going to regret it later if you end up getting the title out of it? Which I don't think they're going to. Like, he's been every bit as good as advertised. And despite the fact that that team is just falling apart with injury around him, he's the only reason they're even in contention right now, without question.
Matt LaFleur should be NFL Coach of the Year.
You know, he's making a strong case. Malik Willis, a guy that I didn't think would be anything. You know, I remember when a lot of people wanted the Lions to draft him at one point. I don't know why. I wasn't convinced on it then. Certainly, he didn't do anything in Tennessee to dissuade me of that notion. And then when he ultimately got cut for Will Levis, like, okay. He's going to be a career backup. Somehow, with Jordan Love being out, he has stepped up in a big way. Like, I thought he was done. Like, I thought when Tennessee cut him, that was his only chance he was going to ever get to be a starter, and he was basically resigning himself to be a career backup. I really, truly thought that. And, well, you and me and everyone else who thought that so far are being proven very, very wrong. He's completing almost 3/4 of his passes so far this season. A 73.5% completion percentage, about 9.5 yards per attempt, and 114 yards rushing. He's the 4th different Packers player with 200-plus passing yards, 50-plus rushing yards, a passing TD, and a rushing TD in a game. He wasn't even on the roster, like, this time last month. And yet, here we are. And I don't think it's necessarily that Malik Willis is ultimately that good, but whatever LaFleur is doing up there is working. He's making a very, very strong case for Coach of the Year right now. I'm about ready to hand it to him based just on this alone.
Well, Andy Dalton, who looks like if you asked AI what an Irishman looks like, will be the Panthers' QB the rest of the year. Is that an overreaction, or is that reality?
That's a fact. Bryce Young's done. They have clearly made their decision. The way that he's been talked about since has very much made it abundantly clear that the current brain trust in Carolina, they didn't want Bryce Young. Like, they basically inherited him from the previous regime, and they have no use for this guy. Like, he's not going to play another snap probably this season for Carolina, especially the way Dalton's performing now. He somehow was the first QB this season to get to 300-plus passing yards and 3-plus passing touchdowns. Explain that to me. He's got two starts in the last two seasons. He has more 300-yard passing games than Bryce Young had in 18 starts over that same span. What does that tell you? They have clearly moved on from Bryce Young. I think it was pretty obvious the day they benched him and announced Dalton was the starter that Dave Canales and company were just over him. Like, they have no use for the guy. This is it. Dalton's going to be the guy at least for the rest of this season, and I think Bryce Young has started his last game, barring some kind of catastrophic injury in Carolina.
It looks like the Dalton show in North Carolina. Mike McCarthy won't last the season in Dallas.
Okay, that's just ridiculous. I'm sorry.
they're panicking in Dallas just a little bit?
They always panic in Dallas. It's what they do. Like, Jerry Jones is like the king of this. Like, you're on the hot seat from the second, like, for the first time you lose a game in a season in that town.
Yep.
And it hasn't been good. They've been outscored in their last two home games by a factor of 56-22.
Yep.
But here's the thing, though. In the second half, they came back. They started rallying back. They went and scored 22 unanswered points. Like, the fact that it was looking like that was going to be a blowout of a game. Like, that team, they'll play for Mike McCarthy. Whether or not they necessarily have the talent, they were at least in a position to come back. And I get why people think that McCarthy won't make it the season, because it's Jerry and we know how he overreacts. Like, the king of the overreaction Monday really is Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
But they'd be stupid to do it. Like, it's a slow start, but you have very much an opportunity to right this ship real quick. Like, you have an opportunity as soon as Thursday when you play the Giants to turn this thing around in a hurry. And I have no doubt in my mind, spoiler alert for the pick that we're not going to do on this game, Cowboys are going to win there. Like, you were looking to get, like, you came within 3 points of winning against Baltimore on Sunday. You've got, from here, you've got the Giants. You've got the thus far inexplicably 3-0 Steelers from there. And you've got the Lions, where there's always just some sort of bad juju going on. But if you're going to right this ship, it's going to be this week against Dallas. Now, or against the G-Men. Now, if you go and lose to New York, then, okay, we can talk about is Mike McCarthy the guy to right this ship.
C.J. Gardner-Johnson is right about the Saints being pretenders.
I remember that guy. So, maybe they are, I don't know if they're, I'd say they're pretenders per se. The NFC South is just weak. That's just what it is. If they're pretenders, what does it say about the team that barely beat the pretenders? Like, I don't feel like C.J. Gardner-Johnson or anybody on the Eagles are in any position to throw stones, if we're to be entirely honest here.
Fair.
Like, that's not really, I don't think, if it may be somewhat factually relevant and credible, but I don't want to hear it from them right now. They'd come into Sunday averaging 45.5 points, 6.9 yards per carry. Obviously, that pace did not last that way. But you got the Falcons, Chiefs, and the Buccaneers coming up. And the Saints, keep in mind, did have the lead in the last 2 minutes of that game. This could have gone the other way, and Philly could just be sitting there wondering where things went so horribly wrong for them. Like, we weren't that far away from talking about the Eagles being pretenders. Like, there was very much a chance of that. And again, you're really only one Saquon Barkley injury away from actually being pretenders. Like, I liked C.J. Gardner-Johnson when he was here, but my, he could really do sometimes to keep his mouth shut.
A lot of bulletin board talk.
A little too much, certainly for my liking. I would not recommend, like, because that's just going to get fueled with fire, and ultimately when you get bounced in, like, the first round of the playoffs, if you make it that far.
Yeah, you've got egg on your face a little bit.
Yeah, you're going to have that to get burned with there. Now, you have two, if you're the Saints, you have two matchups coming up very soon against the division rivals. You've got the Falcons, then you got KC, and then you go to Tampa Bay.
That's not a good schedule.
That is not, but if you can take two of those three games in that stretch, then no, I don't think that you're pretenders at all. Is that the last of our overreactions for the
week?
I have
been trying so hard to find a funny one, and I just can't do it today. I think I'm going to have to take a knee on this one.
That's fine. I will accept my disappointment in this, and I guess you can be forgiven just this once.
It's been an exciting week three. Drew was asking about the picks. He thinks that I did pretty well. I'm just going through, and I don't think I did well at all. Because I know we all picked the Niners. That didn't happen.
You sure did. Yeah, that did not pan out. The Niners were definitely one of the losers of this week. That was disappointing.
Baltimore did win, though.
Baltimore did win, so we had that going for us, which is nice. But honestly, I kind of had Baltimore. I think, did I take Baltimore? Like,
I know I was the only one that out of the three of us.
I picked the Cowboys?
I think so.
That doesn't seem like something
we need to do. We need to have that list. I need to take pictures of that list.
Okay, I have an overreaction for you. The refs in this league are absolute garbage.
I don't know. I kind of like that 2-minute warning guffaw that they had.
True. But
gaff, I should say.
The Falcons-Chiefs game, there was a missed pass interference call that would have been a touchdown from Kyle Pitts that evening. But my, had Pitts been able to make that catch, that's a game changer for the Falcons.
Yeah.
And had they gotten that, looking at that pass interference call, like looking at that play, I think there is a strong case to be made. A lot of contact being made on Pitts in the end zone there. Like they had him wrapped up pretty good. He was getting like hugged by KC's defender there. Like you have him just like sitting there slow dancing with the guy in the end zone, clearly not trying to make a play on the ball at all. You can't tell me that's not a pass interference all day long. And with an extra shot at the end zone there, the outcome last night looks a lot different. Brian Cook got there early, got his arms all around Pitts, well before the ball's even close there. Come on. The calls are just getting worse and worse in this league. And while I'm not a guy who likes to complain about the officiating, you have to overcome the bad calls. I'm sorry.
They just happen.
Good teams just do that. But it does seem like it's happening at a far greater rate than it has even in the last few seasons where the officiating just seems to get worse and worse.
This is true. I mean, it's a fast game. It's getting faster. And I think, I mean, even with all the technology, the refs aren't able to keep up.
And it gets worse when you talk about when you talk to the refs after the game. The referee who made the call there, Trey Blake, was asked about the no call, and he had said that was a real time call. Officials have to make a judgment on from the angle they had at the time. They did not feel there was a foul committed. I mean, you're literally tackling the guy before the ball ever gets there. What angle do you have that's not pass interference? Can you explain that to me? I've got nothing here.
I was looking at my shoes. I was like, I think they're tied.
I mean, it sure sounds like we screwed up, but oh well, what are you going to do? I mean, here, like, you probably didn't see, like, look at this here in the end zone, number 8 here.
Yeah.
Like, Cook has got him just wrapped up, is like hanging all
that,
over
I don't
that.
Know. I don't know. That was pretty close.
Dude, he's sitting there hugging the guy before the ball gets there. Like, he's making a tackle on a guy that doesn't have the ball yet. Like, you can't do that.
It was pretty quick, so I guess I could give the refs a little bit of leeway on that. But it was quick, but yeah, you look at it. Yeah, he definitely got tackled well before he had the ball. That was interference.
And even, like, is that one that's reviewable by replay? Because it looks like he's pretty much tackling him. This, a reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution asked, like, is that a reviewable thing?
That's it. There was no interference from the angle that the ref saw. Pass interference is not reviewable. Not at all. They just have to make that call on the field or not. That's a real-time judgment call for us. So basically, we screwed up. Nothing we can do about it. I don't know what to tell you.
Like, we'll make it up to you next game. What can I say? Their check didn't clear. Next. No,
you know,
I can't say
it. Sometimes you wonder about that. You really
put the NFL refs on the apology list, or
absolutely not. Refs never get apologized to on this show. It's not how this works. It is happy hour. We'll come close things out after this. Stick around. Like it was just a week ago that I was trying to really implore people to get on the bandwagon with your Detroit Tigers, and my, they have done nothing since then but continue to prove me right on this.
Well, I don't know. Before, about a month before that, you're like, why am I watching this team? Why am I punishing myself?
And it felt like it at the time.
Yeah.
Who knew that calling all the young kids up and, you know, trading your second best starting pitcher was just the thing this team needed to spark a run? Well, that and having your way overpaid, awful shortstop get a season-ending injury. Who knew that was all it took?
Wow, I guess I never thought of it that way, but
addition, hey, by subtraction,
whichever
is what they
call way that. You want. Yeah, but they are rolling. They're getting some national love. I mean, a lot of people are just, what is going on in Detroit? What's going on at Comerica? Because this team is rolling.
They really are. And they're now in a position where not only are they in the wild card spot now, after yesterday where the Twins dropped 2 to the Red Sox,
yep,
and the Royals lost, you're now officially, you're tied with KC for the 5th wild card spot. And here's how all of that works. As you'll remember, there's no game 163 anymore. They got rid of that around the time they expanded the playoff field officially.
Right.
Because they just wanted to have a game 163 or so like every year. So in the case of the Twins, obviously they have the tiebreaker over the Tigers because in the season series in which they played 13 games against each other, Twins won more of those games. From there, the Royals, also that's not changing either. So that's already done. So they have to surpass KC and Minnesota to officially overtake them in the playoff standings. Ties don't do you any good. Now, if you somehow get a tiebreaker with the Orioles, well, you have that. You took 4 of the 6 in that series. And those are basically the only relevant things. Like, if Seattle somehow makes it in, you do own the tiebreaker over them. So the only other one that you could actually take in here or overtake would be the O's. And you're 4 games behind them right now with 6 left to go. And I don't really think it's necessarily likely. Like, Baltimore would have to basically, I think, lose out. Although, I don't know. They are playing the Yankees in New York this week.
That does help.
That helps, actually, quite a bit. And then they finish the season playing the Twins, who will hopefully be out of contention by then entirely. But they're at least going to be playing for their playoff lives. So you could very well have overtaken them by then. And if you just tie with Baltimore, if you make up that gap, all of a sudden, you're talking about being the 3rd seed in the AL playoff, which I don't hate that idea at all.
Yep.
It would certainly get so you don't have to play against, obviously you wouldn't have to play against Houston at that point, which I really would prefer not to do if at all.
Yeah,
possible.
Yeah. Just, try to stay away from that.
Right. And I believe the way it works is it's a first-round bye, so New York and Cleveland wouldn't be playing at any rate. So that's how that would shake out. But either way, it'd be nice to see you pull ahead even more.
So they don't play, so like the wild card teams kind of battle it out?
Essentially, yeah. In the wild card round, that is how that goes now.
Gotcha.
The playoff, the whole playoff seeding in the MLB is just a kind of a weird thing anymore.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But, you know,
I think it could very much, it will benefit you to pull ahead here and not have to face the Stros. Like, I'd rather take on either Baltimore or literally any other team. I think that's entirely, like, you could beat, like, we've already seen in a short series, you can beat the O's. You've done it twice. You took two series from them. So I don't hate that possibility. Then you probably match up against, if you end up moving into the fifth spot, you would end up facing the Yankees in the next round.
Yikes.
If you end up staying at six, then you would play Cleveland as of right now. In the next round. And I mean, I'm not going to say you can't take Cleveland in a series. I'm not going to say it's out of the realm of possibility. Honestly, the way you're playing right now, I'm not discounting anything that the Tigers could theoretically do here. But there's a whole lot of confusing things, certainly, that could happen at this point to see how this thing shakes out. But basically, you got to win. You got to just keep winning and stay ahead of the Twins and the Royals if you want to keep this thing alive, because ties are going to do you no good here.
No.
But luckily, you have basically, I don't want to see three guaranteed wins, but you're playing the White Sox, who have just, will have, by the time you play them on Friday,
it's solidified history.
Well, they will have made history. They'll be literally the worst team in the modern era of Major League Baseball. They'll have the most losses of any team in a 162-game season. They'll have nothing left to play for. You were telling me, because you like to watch these things, just how despondent the White Sox Twitter has been.
Well, yeah, at the end of the game, our Twitter account would be like, well, check out the score, final score on MLB.com or the app. And then the next game, it's like, yeah, well, they scored more runs than us. What can we say? They're done. I think everybody is just ready to clean out their lockers and just call it a day.
I can see that. Honestly, I'm amazed they're just not like, because I don't know if you saw this story a week or two ago. It was a catcher in the Twins organization who was just tipping pitches because he was ready for the season to be done.
That's a good way to get your, you know what, beat in the locker room.
It's like, I want this season to be, and they were still like in a playoff chase at that point. And he was trying his best to tip pitches, like basically telling hitters what was coming.
Here comes a fastball.
Like, I feel like the White Sox are not far away from that at this point. Just like, here's what it's going to be. Can you just put us out of our bleeping misery already?
Yeah.
Please, for the love of God.
I mean, the Lions, excuse me, Tigers, they got six games left. I mean, I think you're thinking that they could win all six.
I mean,
three against the Rays, three against the Sox.
I think you can absolutely win all the games against the Sox. And Tampa, honestly, they're at 500 right now. They are eliminated from playoff contention. They are playing for absolutely nothing but their pride against this, you know, at this point. I think you could beat Tampa in a three-game set.
Sure.
I'm not worried about that. Like, every single game you have the rest of the way is winnable. I'd go as far as to say at this point you're a lock to make the playoffs. The Twins have to play the Marlins, and then a three-game set against the O's. And this is also the reason I don't think you're catching up to the O's, is because the Twins, well, you need the Twins to lose here, and I think Baltimore will ultimately beat Minnesota. I mean, I don't know, though. Like, if Baltimore sweeps this, no, they're not sweeping against the Yankees. Who am I kidding? But they've faced the Twins and the Marlins the rest of the, or the Marlins and the Orioles. They're not pulling out I don't think three wins in this.
No.
You're a game ahead of them right now, so they need to get one more win than you have. If you get three, if you just say you lose to Tampa Bay, you get swept, and then take the Sox. Minnesota has to win four out of six at a minimum to stay alive. And do you really think the Tigers are only going to go 500 in this last six games?
I think they're going 1,000. I think they're going to win all six.
Wow.
Yep.
That is a bold statement, sir.
Yep. I think Vegas had the Lions at, Tigers at 67% to make the playoffs.
And I feel like there's a reason for that. The Tigers are playing the best baseball. We talk about, you've been playing playoff baseball. We talked about it with the Wings earlier this year. You've been playing playoff hockey for like the last month just to get in.
Yep.
That's the Tigers right now. The last 30 games or so, you've been playing playoff baseball, fighting for your lives every night, So you're already in that mindset. You're already in that mode. You're already trying to, you know, just keep up that pace. Like, you're as primed to make a run here as anybody. Like, playing like this, especially depending on who you face in the first round, and if you're able to pull ahead of both KC and Minnesota, man, I like that. I like those odds a lot. I think you really could potentially go in there and win a wild card series, because it's a 3-game series. I think you could. There's no reason you can't take two or three from the Orioles again.
So they're going to win the wild card series. Lions are going to win the Super Bowl, and the Wings are going to make the playoffs. There we go.
Look
at our Pistons are going to try their very best
and still probably only win 20 games.
Yeah.
On that note, I can't believe you turned me into like Captain Silver Lining this afternoon.
I know. I'm not used to seeing this out of you, Sean.
I'm not used to it. I'm not used to it at all.
I like this new Sean.
Anyway, a full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Sessions. All being well, talk to you tomorrow at 3.